Good afternoon, Regent Radio. This is Omeisama Rahimtula, joined on the line by Dr. Gerald Horn. Hello, Dr. Horn. How are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm good, thank you. And just to let our listeners know that we are Thursday afternoon, so we might be, by the time you're listening to this, we'll be about 2 days behind. But we'll start off today but with some updates, so maybe we can start with Mali.
What's happening in Mali is not very good. As suspected, the conservative religious radicals were not defeated. They just disappeared into the mist. Particularly, they disappeared into the surrounding desert, into the mountains. Now, they're laying explosive devices. They're engaged in suicide bombing. There is a quagmire rapidly developing in Mali that we all predicted. Not only that, but the United States, as you probably know, is supplying intelligence and reconnaissance to the French forces and also helping to transport them. This conflict is spreading into the region as a whole. You might have heard that the Boko Haram, the comrades of the religious radicals in Mali, and they, of course, are in Nigeria, just a few days ago, they assassinated some North Korean doctors who were giving polio shots to children. You know that that's a direct outgrowth of what happened when Osama bin Laden was killed by the U.S. authorities, when the United States authorities sent public health specialists to where he was staying in Pakistan to try to inveigle his family members to DNA samples through the roof of supposedly providing polio shots and the like. And now this has backfired tremendously against this righteous crusade to eliminate polio, a very devastating disease. So all in all, the news from Mali and from the region as a whole is not good, but I must say it was utterly predictable that this quagmire would develop.
And your analysis on an update on Syria, I'm sure things are not getting better there, same as Mali.
Oh, yeah, the news there might be worse. Apparently, the rebels have taken over an air base, so they might now have access to an air force. Supposedly, they took over a dam built by Moscow some years ago, which means they have control over the electricity supply of a large deal of Syria, a large portion of Syria. Supposedly, fighting is creeping ever closer to the heart of Damascus. And this has led some observers in the North Atlantic mainstream press to conclude that the days of President al-Assad are numbered. Now, I should say quite quickly that that kind of prediction has been made repeatedly in recent months, and it has not come true. But I must say, if these latest news reports are accurate about the air base and the dam, well, then these prognosticators in the North Atlantic mainstream press may be proved to be correct.
And finally, an update on Tunisia.
Well, I think the last time we talked, the human rights lawyer had been assassinated, and since that time, there have been massive protests in the streets of Tunis. Apparently, what's happening in Tunis, where after all, the so-called Arab Spring was ignited, is becoming a template for the region. What I mean is that there is an increasing showdown between the secularists, speaking broadly, and the conservative religious radicals. The conservative religious radicals have a militia. They have been harassing the secularists, particularly women, particularly feminist women. It's unclear right now where Tunis is heading, where Tunisia is heading, but all of the signs that we can see from this side of the Atlantic are not very positive.
And moving on to this week, Desmond Tutu has condemned the American idea of setting up a judicial review court to sign off on targeted killings of Americans believed to be terrorists living abroad. Desmond Tutu has come out in opposition to this kind of review board, not necessarily the court itself, but what it would create a two-tiered citizenry, right? Those of U.S. citizens and those of deemed other, right? And this is also coming, his commentary is coming at the same time as I think the UN is trying to set up some sort of review or report of drone use and trying to think around conventions around that.
Well, you're absolutely correct. You hit the nail on the head. I was quite struck by the letter that Desmond Tutu, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate from South Africa, a leading cleric, the letter that he sent to the New York Times just a day or two ago, where he invoked the Dred Scott case from the United States in the middle of the 19th century during the bad old days of slavery. Recall that the Dred Scott case of the U.S. Supreme Court basically said that Africans, people of African descent, had no rights that those defined as white were bound to respect. In other words, there was a two-tiered level of nationality, if you like, in the United States of America. And what Desmond Tutu suggested is that with drone warfare and this proposal that if the U.S. president is going to kill U.S. citizens with the drones, there should be judicial review. But if the U.S. president is going to kill non-U.S. citizens, there's no judicial review. He said that this basically imports Dred Scott into the 21st century, and it's very damaging and very dangerous. I should also add that dozens of nations are developing drone technology. The United States does not have a monopoly of that kind of knowledge, and we're facing the prospect of the law of the jungle, I must repeat. I mean, for example, let us say that there are Iranians in Southern California, from where I'm speaking to you now, that the United States will not extradite to Tehran. Well, if the Iranians develop drone warfare, and by the way, they claim to have shot down a U.S. drone and they can engage in reverse engineering, presumably to develop their own drone, let's say they wanted to send a drone over these streets in Los Angeles that I'm driving to now to kill one of their political opponents. Under the operative U.S. law, or international law the United States has operated under, with regard to drone strikes, presumably they would be justified in doing so. If that kind of occurrence takes place, it seems to me we're on a slippery slope to hell indeed, and we have basically entered the law of the jungle.
And there's lately this issue of drones has really taken up a lot of, I guess, news space, you know, after a lot of people commented after the inauguration, the second inauguration of Barack Obama. He sent the authorized drones to Yemen, for example. And so there's been a lot of use of drones, for example, in Pakistan, in Yemen, in Somalia. And it seems to be more and more of a tactic, a common tactic in warfare these days. And so much so that the UN is, you know, needing to look into this. What is your kind of, I guess, overall view of this increase in drone use, and what how is that changing warfare?
Well, it's basically worsening warfare, and I hope that that's not an oxymoron. That is to say that when you have someone sitting in Florida and effectively killing people in Yemen, it's a very dangerous situation. Not only that, but the latest leap in the technology of drones is to get drones to think for themselves. That is to say, we're moving to robot warfare from drone warfare, where there's the prospect of robots basically operating on their own without any human intervention. Now, you don't have to be an aficionado of science fiction to worry about all of the different scenarios that can develop when you enter into robot warfare. I mean, presumably, they do not have the sensibilities of we humans, and of course, I'll accept the criticism that the sensibilities of we humans is also open to question, but it also raises all sorts of dire scenarios about robots being let loose, and of course, if you're a science fiction writer, you may want to develop a screenplay where they basically then wind up taking over from the humans.
Definitely not a sci-fi fan, but it would be a good would be a great storyline that I might suggest to some sci-fi friends. And the other big news, I guess, this week is that the Pope has, Pope Benedict has announced his resignation. So where does that leave the popacy? Is that what it's called? The papacy?
The papacy.
The papacy.
Well, I think that the Pope Benedict's papacy has not been a success, to put it mildly. He, of course, helped to endorse those who were involved in Holocaust denial when he went to Mexico City. He basically gave an endorsement to a man, a high-level official of the Roman Catholic Church, who was involved not only in sexual abuse, but drug dealing and fathering children, believe it or not. Obviously, the papacy is still wrestling with the question of celibacy. The papacy under Pope Benedict, of course, came down heavily against nuns who came out very strongly against the kind of male supremacist attitudes that reign in the Roman Catholic Church. What's striking about his resignation also is that part of the criticism of Pope Benedict was the speech he gave just after assuming this high office, where he sharply criticized other faiths, including Islam, in very unsparing and sharp language. On tap, perhaps, might be an African pope, Peter Turkson of Ghana, also a possible candidate to lead the Roman Catholic Church, is a leading Catholic official from neighboring Quebec. So the next pope also could be a Canadian.
And what's the procedure? There's going to be a conclave. Do you have any idea how long that will take?
Oh, I think we'll know who the next pope is within about 2 weeks.
Okay. And I guess one thing I forgot to get to before I got to the Pope was that on Tuesday, North Korea again tested a nuclear bomb, and that there's been obviously reactions from South Korea and the U.S.
Well, yes. The North Koreans have not taken well the allegation made by then U.S. President George W. Bush that they were part of the so-called Axis of Evil along with Iraq and Iran. The North Korean regime looked at what befell Saddam Hussein's Iraq, where they were invaded by tens of thousands of U.S. troops, and Mr. Saddam Hussein was subsequently executed. Taking note of that, the North Koreans, who after all are technically in a state of war with the United States, there was a truce signed in 1953, but that truce, like any truce, can be basically overthrown by either party. So they decided in their wisdom that the way to survive, the way not to be overthrown by invading U.S. troops, and by the way, there are 37,000 U.S. troops in neighboring South Korea, is to develop a nuclear weapon. This obviously puts China in a very difficult position. China has served as a lifeline for the North Korean regime. And China, of course, is now under pressure from Japan, is under pressure from South Korea, is under pressure from the United States. And with this nuclear explosion said to have been detonated by the North Koreans, it's really complicated life in Beijing.
Okay, and you had sent this email about a horse meat scandal, so I looked it up. I had no idea. I hadn't read about it. But apparently, products in the UK that were marked beef, in fact, were found to have horse meat in them. And some products had 100%, like this lasagna brand, had 100% horse meat. And even in Germany now, I've been seeing reports that they've been finding horse meat in German products that were marked beef. So this is obviously creating a lot of scandal, but I think it has a larger implication for the food industry, labeling in the food industry, which has always been a big issue, even in terms of like what we
Broadway and Third,
what we mark as organic or whatnot.
Well, it's a major scandal, and it also implicates the international finance crisis. What I mean is that in Ireland, in particular, when things seem to be going swimmingly economically and financially, many people were buying horses. There was a horse industry that was developing, the breeding of horses, for example. But after the bottom fell out, these horses were abandoned, and they were sent to abattoirs where horses are to be slaughtered. These abattoirs were basically deluged with horses. When the horses were slaughtered, then the question is, well, what do you do with the meat? I guess you could bury it, but this is capitalism, so they're going to try to figure a way to profit. So what they basically did was masquerade horse meat as beef and then sold it throughout Europe, where it's gotten into lasagna, it's gotten into hamburgers. I should also add that once some rather enterprising entrepreneurs took note of what was happening, that you could basically raise and slaughter horses in a way that was cheaper than, for example, raising and slaughtering cows, this gave a jolt to this now fraudulent industry of raising horses for slaughter that would then be used to masquerade as beef. And that particularly developed in Romania in Eastern Europe. So it's unclear if this has spread across the Atlantic. My only message is that people should be very careful about what they're putting in their mouths nowadays.
And I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if you were watching the finals of the African Nations Cup and what you thought of Nigeria's victory playing against Burkina Faso, which was an amazing surprise that they made it that far in the tournament.
Well, it didn't surprise me. I'll never forget. I think it was the 1996 Olympics where Nigeria played Argentina. And Argentina, of course, is one of the top teams in the world. And the Nigerians literally and figuratively trampled the Argentines. They ran all over those poor guys. I mean, they could have been arrested for child abuse. That is to say, they just were scoring goals at will. And it was quite remarkable, Aunt.
That's quite a funny analogy. And so as you mentioned, you are in Southern California, and of course you're there as every year for the Pan-African Film Festival. Would you like to give us some highlights? I know last year there was this film that I really wanted to see about Tarab music, but this year what's on the books and what's exciting there?
Well, yesterday I saw this film, Bitter Sugar, which is a co-production between Quebec and Guadeloupe, and it's about something that we should all ponder. It was about what happened in the aftermath of the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804, when slavery supposedly was abolished in Guadeloupe, but then it was brought back by Napoleon Bonaparte. And so this film is a dramatization of those events. And it basically features a very interesting kind of transposition. That is to say, it takes place in a contemporary courtroom with historical figures. So it's a very creative film, and I recommend it highly. It's called Bitter Sugar in English. And let's see, I saw Fondo Brazil, which is a film co-produced by the French and the Brazilians. It talks about this black cultural festival that takes place in Brazil, featuring artists of African descent. And it was quite remarkable because you get to see the commonalities and the parallels between people of African descent and how they exist and are similar all over the world.
Okay, and we know that you're a big fan of films. You teach film at the university. I'm sure everyone wants to know, are you coming to TIFF this year?
Oh, yeah, see, that's in August, huh?
No, September.
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on the schedule. It depends on the schedule. I mean, obviously, it's one of the top, you know, as you know, I've come before.
Yeah.
And I would say along with the Berlin Film Festival, the Venice Film Festival, Cannes, Paris, that the Toronto Film Festival is one of the leading places where one goes to see the best in global cinema.
Okay, then we'll definitely be looking out for you in September and hopefully having an event as we always do with a different book list. One thing that we didn't get to talk about last week is I know that you're a big fan of Donald Byrd. Of course, Change Is Gonna Come is the theme song for The Horn Report, and he passed away last week, last Monday, I believe, February 4th. Your thoughts on Donald Byrd?
Well, Donaldson's Toussaint Louverture Bird, the name says it all. His parents had the wisdom to name him after the great Haitian hero, Toussaint Louverture. And Donald Byrd was also unique in the sense that he was very well educated. As you know, he had a PhD in education from Columbia University. He taught at Howard University and was at Howard University in Washington, D.C., a historically black college that he developed a group called the Black Byrds that developed that theme change that you just made reference to and developed a number of top hits. I noticed that in his obituary, it was mentioned that after he started doing this kind of jazz rock fusion, that many artists accused him of selling out. They said that he was basically corrupting the purity of the music, but he disagreed vehemently, and he felt that he was only reaching a wider audience, and that in any case, his musicianship, his musical ability was not being corrupted as the critics charged.
And we seem to have gotten through everything we wanted to talk to today. Was there anything else that you wanted to add? We're done a bit early.
Maybe I should talk about some more of these Pan-African Film Festival films.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Today, I'm going to see Our Beloved Sudan, which is a documentary about the crisis in that country. Once the largest nation by territory on the continent of Africa, but since the secession of South Sudan some months ago, Algeria now takes that exalted position, and this film goes into how that process unfolded. I plan to see Mugabe, Hero or Villain. I'm going to either see that tonight or on Saturday morning. It goes into the controversial land reform in Zimbabwe and the vilification of President Robert Mugabe as a result. Free Angela and all of the political prisoners, which I understand showed at the Toronto Film Festival last year, is going to be playing here in Los Angeles on Sunday. That's on my list. Let's see. Foot Soldiers. It's a documentary about these black women who attended Spelman College, a historically black college in Atlanta, and the role they played in breaking down the walls of Jim Crow in Georgia in the 1960s. I could go on in this vein, so tell me if I should.
Yeah, please, if you can. The festival sounds amazing. And also, are these films, do you think that they, you mentioned that one of the films was premiered at TIFF, but what is the chances that, that these, in terms of the industry, that these kinds of films will be picked up for distribution later on?
It's hard to say. I mean, some of them you probably will be able to find on Netflix subsequently. Others you might be able to find from a distributor like California Newsreel. I should also say there are a couple of Jamaican films, Born in Trenchtown, Trenchtown being this rather poor neighborhood in Jamaica that has also been the site and the scene for many bursts of musical creativity. I saw Kwantu, which was about the Jamaican Maroons. These are the Africans who were initially enslaved, but then fought the British troops to a standstill, and basically, before the Haitian Revolution, before the revolt against British rule that led to the United States of America, they had basically defeated the British and had established their own homeland within the confines of the island of Jamaica. And, of course, they have a very distinct and unique culture in Jamaica to this very day. Part of the controversy with the Jamaican Maroons was with their agreement, supposedly, to return runaway Africans to their masters. As it was explained in this film, they decided to take that course because the British were always sending fraudulent runaway Africans. People who were supposed to be runaway Africans but actually were British agents would then sort of infiltrate into the Maroon community. And so rather than run that risk, they would just turn aside all those Africans who were running away seeking to enter their community. Needless to say, there's still bitter feelings and recriminations to this very day. The Maroons, basically as early as 1738, 1739, had defeated the British.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us yet again this week. Anything else to add?
No, I think that's about it. As you can see, I'm sort of
you're running around
as a result of this film festival. So,
well, it sounds very exciting. It sounds very exciting. So enjoy the rest of the festival. There's about three more days left, and we'll talk to you next week.
I hope so. Take care.
Bye-bye.